todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. 1991 wasn't just another year, it was a musical and cultural earthquake. Grunge went from the underground to the mainstream, changing rock music and an entire generation's outlook along the way. I first discovered today's guest, Rob Janicki, through his Substack and was immediately intrigued by his insights into this era. His upcoming book, Slacker, 1991, Teen Spirit Angst and the Generation It Created, explores the movement's impact, the key players, and why the world embraced it so fiercely. Rob is also the founder of Generation Riff, and I can't wait to hear his take, so let's get him on the line. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast, Rob.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you for having me.
Well, I read your book and I absolutely loved it. I like the personal angle because you mentioned right off the bat finding solace in music during a difficult time in your childhood. So how do you think this personal connection to grunge shaped your perspective when writing Slacker?
Well, first of all, I'm very happy that you liked it. Thank you. I can take that question and answer all the way back to probably the first time I heard Alive by Pearl Jam in 1991, when 10 was released, their debut album. And hearing that song, and as it's become pretty famous since, everybody who follows this music knows about Eddie Vedder's childhood with the man he grew up with believing was his father, was not his father, and his real biological dad was a family friend who he had met once or twice, but then didn't really find out who he was until that man passed away. So there was anger and there was sadness and frustration in that song that had to do with a son and father relationship. And I think that's what I gravitated towards very early. It just spoke to me, even though my situation wasn't like that. It was still the overall meaning, I guess, of the song where the son was sort of devastated by loss. I think that was the first time I remember feeling like, wow, okay, I'm not alone. And then as I discovered, I had heard other songs from other grunge bands prior to that one, but I think that lyric was the first one that connected me emotionally. And then I started listening to stuff from Lane Staley from Alice in Chains and Chris Cornell from Soundgarden and Kurt Cobain from Nirvana. The emotional subjects and topics that these people were writing and singing about really made me feel like, wow, I'm not alone here. And then it turned out that millions of others felt the same way.
Yeah, I think that the grunge movement kind of brought back, without the sound, but in the spirit of the singer-songwriters of the early 70s, there was that very introspective, confessional bent to that music. And then we got into stadium rock with all the girls, 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 and Motley Crue and the party bands and stuff like that. So that it was kind of like a backlash to that, don't you think, grunge?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I grew up listening to heavy metal. I'll be 52 years old, so I had a very large, like, well, I don't, for a little kid, but a collection of music when I was little. I had tons of vinyl records, Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, early Def Leppard. I mean, I grew up listening to that at first, and I was attracted to the sound, the heaviness of the music. But then, I think as we all grow up and get a little bit more intuitive and more in touch with who we are, maybe that's when lyrics start to play more of a role. And in the earlier metal that we were just talking about, I was definitely too young to really comprehend everything that they were talking about. And some of it wasn't all that personal, like you said, especially in the 80s. It was party, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, which as a 12-year-old, 14-year-old, how much of that was I doing?
That's like
Right.
something to aspire to when you're a kid.
It sounded
Sounded
awesome,
awesome, but
but I couldn't relate. The grunge, it came, and this is what happens, I think, with any big social or cultural movement, musical movement. The timing of when it happens and the age of the person or people that it's talking to, that plays such a huge role in how attracted you become to it.
I agree. And you have a really cool idea. There's a QR code playlist at the beginning of your book, which is a really fun touch. I have seen some Spotify playlists mentioned in books, but never a QR code. So you're very forward thinking there. Now, what was the process for curating these songs? And were there any tracks you wondered whether to include or exclude that really captured the essence of that era?
Yes, so that's a great question. I'm glad you picked up on it because I have to give credit to Inspired by You Books and Inspired Girl Enterprises, which is my publisher. They came up with the idea for the QR code. We were having a conversation one day on the phone, and or it may have been a Zoom call. We talked about how people sometimes listen to music when they read. I'm one of them. I typically will have instrumental music or even classical music, believe it or not. I'll keep on in the background or something that just doesn't have a ton of lyrics. Because you're hearing the words and you're trying to read words and it can get a little bit confusing. But some people really do like to listen to music when they read. So we had this conversation and they were like, what if we created a playlist and they can scan it right from the book with the cue? So it was there. I can't take credit for it. It was their idea. As far as the playlist, I struggled with it because I knew I had to, or at least I thought I had to make it as commercially acceptable as I can, and trying to sneak in maybe some deeper cuts from some of these bands, because I've been listening to this music and studying it and researching it. I mean, honestly, since the late 80s when I first really discovered it. And I just consumed everything about it. So I had to remember, even when I was writing the book, this was part of the editing process. I had to remember I wasn't writing for people like me necessarily. I was writing for people who may be more casual fans of the music and didn't know all of the B-sides or the deeper cuts. So it took a while to put the list together, the playlist, because I didn't want to go completely commercial with the hits, and I don't think I did. I had to remember I was putting this out for a greater audience, a wider audience. But the next time I do it, and we're talking about other editions down the road, maybe I'll do something a little more obscure with some of the songs.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, that's a good idea. Now, you interviewed Dr. Donna Gaines and several
Yes.
other psychologists and musicologists for Slacker. So it's not just a personal POV book. Now, was there a particular insight or revelation from these conversations that changed how you understood grunge's impact on Generation X?
Well, you mentioned Dr. Gaines, and she's just an incredible woman. She really had a great relationship with the Ramones, in particular Joey Ramone, and I learned so much. I knew what I knew about that time period and that band, but she was really just a great source of information and what it was like in New York back then. So I love talking to her. As far as did I mean, yes, I learned a lot from all of the people I spoke with because they're all experts in their field and they did teach me a ton. But I don't want this to come across the wrong way, but I feel like they confirmed what I already felt or knew about the movement, if that makes any sense. Like, I knew it was emotional. I knew it had these feelings of sort of deep, dark things that sometimes people don't really like to talk about or share with one another. But that time period, that early and mid 90s time period in music, it started to allow people to be okay with doing that. And I always knew that was the attraction. At least I really felt it. And I think what these people did is they sort of confirmed that for me that, yeah, human beings, they don't like to feel like they're alone. And when other people share their thoughts and feelings with them, they then can share them back and it becomes an easier conversation.
Well, I'm Gen X as well, earlier version of Gen X than yourself. But I remember something that resonated quite deeply with me in your book, where you discuss how the mid-80s music scene was really segregated. You were either a metal fan, a rock fan, a pop fan, or a new wave fan, and you weren't really allowed to like different genres of music, unlike now. What factors do you think contributed to those rigid boundaries, and why do you think we see so much more crossover in music fandom today?
That was amazing that you really couldn't do that publicly. You could not say you liked one
No.
thing and then the other. I think what changed it, well, I think two things are well, many things changed that perception, but I think two of the biggest things were MTV playing a lot of this music, and then we get to see what the people looked like. Because back in the day, we had album covers and we had magazine covers and whatnot, but we really weren't inundated with images of these people that we were listening to the music from. So we got to see them more often, and I don't know, it just felt a little bit more familiar, and they all looked different and they had different styles to them. And so that maybe had something to do with it, but I think Lollapalooza was the thing that brought people of all kinds of backgrounds, races, religions, creeds, political, whatever differences people have in their personal lives, for the most part, were brought together to these fields around the country to watch bands and artists of all different types of music play. So I remember when I spoke to Speech from Arrested Development for the book, he talked about how they were on Lollapalooza 3 in 1993, I believe. And he said that was really the first time they played to a white audience, or many white people in an audience, because most of their early audiences were mostly black music fans. I think that's when you were allowed to say, I like metal, I like punk, I like EDM, I like hip hop, I like singer-songwriter, folk music. I mean, look what happened. We had Warped Tour soon after that, and then Lilith Fair soon after that. So we had all of these different festivals with different genres, but all of the same people kept going.
Also, I think social media and YouTube has a lot to do with younger fans liking these older bands from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, because they have access to it and there's not really a gatekeeper. And I don't feel like younger fans of music that we grew up listening to are posers, like we used to think back in the day. So, how do you think social media has also given grunge more resonant voice in the noise of many different kinds of music to choose from?
Oh, it is tremendous. And if you don't, I mean, I don't mean you, because you obviously recognize it, but if you're a person who doesn't recognize that social media is the key for its continuation and its rebirth, I mean, you're probably just not paying attention. Because if you look around the internet, if you look around, I mean, one example on Instagram is that the Grunge Bible. I interviewed one of the co-founders of that. That site has almost 1 million followers, and I can guarantee you that it's not 1 million Gen X followers. And I know for a fact it's not, because I interact with them. We talk, we respond to each other's comments and whatnot on the site, and other sites like it around the internet. They're younger people, and they are being introduced to this stuff from either, their parents or older, way older, cousins or things like that. But people in their lives who grew up with this music are introducing it to them. And now, because of technology, they can go right social media and the internet and find everything that these people are telling them about. And then if they're a music fan, and if they're particularly a rock music fan, really, what's not to like about that music? So they're probably already dialed in to that sound, and now they're hearing it. And wow, I really do like this. I personally had high school kids reach out to me last year. They found me on one of my social media sites. They were creating a mini documentary for a film class, and they decided on a topic before they found me. They did their mini doc on Lollapalooza, and they interviewed me. I appeared in their documentary, and these were 15-year-old high school kids in Ohio talking about something that happened well over 30 years ago.
Wow,
So,
that's encouraging.
yeah, absolutely. I think it's great. There are so many social media sites now, and as you get older, it's normal to have nostalgic points of view, and you want to look back sometimes, and they're popping up everywhere. The way the algorithms work is that if you look at one, you're going to find 10 more, and it just
This
keeps
is
going.
true.
So there's so many, it's great.
Well, I want to move on a little bit more about your personal experiences, because Slacker does delve into your own depression history and the psychological effects of music. Was there a particular song or album from that era that had the most profound impact on your mental health journey, and what made it resonate deeply with you?
That is a really good question as well. You know, there are many, but the one, it's really two that stand out the most for me, and they're both from the same band. One is an EP and one is a full length, and it would be Alice in Chains. Their record Dirt, their second album Dirt, and the EP Sap. The reason both of those, I mean, Alice in Chains is a very, very interesting band in my opinion. They're one of the heavier bands of the era, but also one of the slower ones, which is, you know, some people who don't like rock music might not understand that, but they just had a very, very unique, heavy sound, but for the most part, slow, or certainly some songs were very slow. But there was an atmosphere in their sound. They had, you know, two vocalists. The harmonizing was beautiful. The melodies were beautiful. And that was put up against these really painful and introspective and honest lyrics about, you know, pain and suffering. And in Lane's case, it was addiction, suicide, all of these tough and difficult things. So when I would listen to those records, I never had a drug problem. I never, you know, that wasn't, I didn't relate to that. But what I related to was his, you know, some of his suicidal thoughts, certainly his depression and loneliness. But the music with the words, it just did something. It was, I mean, almost trance-like at times, where you just let it kind of happen, and then you felt, or talking about myself, I felt better. And this reminds me of a question you asked earlier about some of the things that I learned from speaking to the people in the book. When you listen to heavy or even aggressive music and you're upset, people sometimes say, "Why would you do that? Like, that's dark and sad, and it makes you feel angry." But it doesn't. It actually makes you feel the opposite because of what I said earlier about Alive. You feel like you're a part of something else. Other people understand you. And that is a normal human instinct. When you feel connected, you then feel a little bit, some of that weight has come off of you, and you feel a little bit more at ease and peaceful, and then maybe even happy. Those records, those Alice in Chains records, really did that for me. They still do. I mean, I'm much better now, but they still, in times of trouble here and there, I can go back to those songs and suddenly feel better.
Well, you write about the grunge movement emerging from Seattle and then kind of infiltrating or conquering the world, if you will. But beyond the music itself, what elements of the grunge movement do you think have had the most lasting cultural impact on society?
You know, the music for sure, but outside of that, it has to be, and people from back then will hate this, but it has to be the fashion, the look, because it is so. I remember my mom shopping in thrift stores because that's all we could really afford back when I was a little kid, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and you know, during the summers it was very hot, but during the winters it was very cold, and I wore flannel jackets and corduroy pants and anything to keep you warm. And that's why the people in Seattle, for the most part, wore those types of clothing, because it's cold up in Seattle, and those clothes are warm.
Yeah.
But it became a symbol of the sound, a symbol of the music. So if you look at someone now, anytime you, and I've done these with the book and some other promotional things where, I'll go speak somewhere or book signing and, they'll call it grunge night, or, they'll have a reference to that time period. And all of the promotion, at least somewhere in the flyers or online, or when you get there, someone's wearing a flannel shirt, or there's a pair of Doc Martens on somebody's feet. Everyone has the look down, which, it's interesting, and I get it. I understand why, but I think that might be what's one of the things outside of the music that's lasted so long. You could look at somebody wearing that kind of getup, and you could just point and say, grunge. Yeah.
Well, the subtitle of your book mentions the generation it created. So, looking back from now, 2025, what do you see as the most significant ways that the slacker generation has influenced today's cultural landscape? I mean, particularly as Generation X now occupies positions of leadership and influence.
Yeah, that's, I talk about this a lot with people, and probably like any other generation, it has its pluses and minuses. But I think because we're also, Gen X is also usually referred to as the forgotten generation. So we kind of went by the wayside pretty quickly. And I think that gave us an edge and an attitude and sort of a, well, I'm just going to do my own thing because nobody cares anyway. And now that we are older and we are in a position of authority in some cases, and maybe in some people's situations, even if you're one of those Gen Xers who comes from this scene and loves the music and was sort of grown up or raised by the music, I would like to think we have an attitude towards today's culture where we can help them be who they want to be. You don't have to follow every rule. You don't have to be this cookie cutter person or have this cookie cutter lifestyle. We didn't, and we're okay. Use art, use music, use your creative traits to find happiness in your life. Because the way I grew up, it was the total opposite of that. I was supposed to go to school, go to college, get a city or state job, get a pension, retire, and die. Like that was the playbook. But we don't live by that playbook. And I think now more than ever, we should probably tell our younger people that we're living around, sometimes you got to pay close attention to what's going on. And if you don't like it, buck the system a little bit and do your own thing. It could work out for you.
Well, Rob, we are coming to a close here, but you are on the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast, so I must ask you, what is your own personal rock and roll nightmare?
Ooh, well, it's definitely music related, which makes a ton of sense, I'm sure, to the people listening. The rock and roll nightmare that I would have is if people going forward, say kids in their teens and 20s now, and anybody else in the future, it would be such a shame if they cannot find music as something to guide their lives and be so influential and so important the way I did, the way you did. Now, they're not going to have a generation of one type of music anymore because of the culture and the different styles of music and how we consume music. But music specifically, if it were to not be so important to them and not be a lifelong obsession, because I've learned so much and I've gained so much from it, I would hope that everybody else has that opportunity going forward. And if it doesn't happen, that would be a rock and roll nightmare for sure.
Yeah, I think the thing about music, especially when we were growing up, is that it was part of our environment wherever we were. If we were in the car and a certain song came on the radio because we didn't choose it, or at a concert or something like that. Whereas a movie or a book, that's not really part of the communal experience where everyone around you is listening to that same song. So it's kind of different now.
It is. And music is the one medium, I think, that it could have remained as, we all heard it at the same time. We all saw the video if people were still showing videos, which they're not really. But yes, because books you can read on your own, films, all that stuff. But music, yeah, you were in the car, you were in a store, it came on the overhead.
Right.
It was just around us everywhere, and it was a great, maybe oversaturation in some cases for sure, but the fact that we all heard it and can talk about it and be influenced by it, I mean, in my opinion, wasn't a bad thing. Yeah, it's unfortunately, it's a lot different now. So I just hope that when kids do find it, whatever music that speaks to them, it doesn't matter the genre, it doesn't matter the artist, but whatever speaks to them, I hope they can get something out of it to the point where it can help them through the rest of their lives, both as a music fan, but also as a person, and maybe give them ideals and give them some sort of view of life that will help them be a better person that maybe they wouldn't have been without the music.
Well put. So the book is Slacker 1991, Teen Spirit Angst and the Generation It Created. Is the book out now, or if not, can it be pre-ordered, and where can fans find and follow you online?
Yes, so the book is out in early release form, which means it is only sold on my website right now, and that's just robjanicki.com. They can follow me. I'm everywhere, but mainly Instagram. So Rob_Janicki is Instagram. They can pre-order it, especially for people outside of the United States, because my website only ships domestically here in the US. They can pre-order on Amazon, Walmart, Barnes and Noble, anywhere online that sells books. They can pre-order it now, and those orders will begin shipping on June 3rd of this year.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Rob. I really appreciate your time and your insights.
No, thank you, Stacy. This was great. I love the questions. They were awesome. And I love talking to you about all this stuff. So thank you.
Ah, thank you.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCKN-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening. Well, she's mine.